Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, May 19, 2021. South Sudan's COVID task force cuts down on its activities during the coronavirus pandemic.
We even went to President and we presented that plan, and we are promised that the government also pledged to give money. But unfortunately, up to now, we have not gotten anything.
And Sudan shuts down schools and colleges due to increase in cases of coronavirus.
This academic year was only 2 months, and pupils have not learned anything at all. Our children have wasted a lot of time.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Officials at South Sudan's National Ministry of Health say shortage of funds and human resource is forcing the ministry to cut down on the activities of the COVID-19 task force. Dr. Richard Lacou, the incident manager for COVID-19 at the ministry, says cutting down on activities to respond to the disease could affect the fight against the pandemic. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Dr. Richard Lacou, the COVID-19 incident manager at the Health Ministry, says the task force can no longer sustain their operations. He says donors have pulled back from funding the $160 million budget to fight the pandemic.
We even went to President and we presented that plan, and we are promised that the government also pledged to give money. But unfortunately, up to now, we have not gotten anything.
Dr. Lacou says donors managed to fund about 40% of the COVID-19 budget.
You have the rapid response teams. We had deployed teams, surveillance people at the endpoints, at the points of entry, like Numele, for example. We used to have teams there that help in sample collection, but testing, and also get us data here, and then we make sure to follow the status. This, we used to get funding from WHO. WHO has a funding for period of time. The year has ended. They notify us in March that the money is not there.
Dr. Angelo Guap-Thorne, chief of the Health Ministry's COVID-19 operations, says when they began, there were 14 health officers to manage cases under home-based care.
We have removed 9 people. We remain with only 5. They are the one now managing home-based care. Also, we have a team called Mortality Surveillance. Mortality Surveillance, these are people we deploy to assist the families. If somebody dies suspicious of COVID or confirm of COVID, they help them advise on the variant. When we start, I remember also we started with 14, but we have to reduce the number to half.
Dr. Thorne says the task force has also scaled back work at Sentinel sites. He says a team of 45 health officers in Juba has now been cut to 3, and Juba's Emergency Operations Center, which hosts the National Laboratory, now has only 2 vehicles, including an ambulance. COVID-19 vaccines have also not been transported to the state level as of Sunday, and most of the doses that were delivered to Juba in March were still sitting in the capital in state of being delivered to the rest of the country's 9 states.
We need to move these vaccines. When you talked about planes, WFP has also their own schedule, but they're also contributing in distributing the drugs.
Dr. Joseph Wamala, the World Health Organization's Emergency Health Response Officer in South Sudan, says the challenges are threatening the fight against the pandemic at a time when South Sudan needs to be more vigilant.
We have 10 countries that have contributed to 81% of the COVID-19 confirmed cases in the African region in the past 21 days. I'll mention South Africa in the lead, but close to us, Ethiopia and Kenya. Another reason why it's not time for us to put the guard down.
As of Sunday, only 6,403 doses out of 132,000 AstraZeneca vaccines delivered to South Sudan had been used. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay at home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Still on health issues, health authorities in Sudan have shut down schools, universities, and all other learning institutions for a period of 1 month due to a recent spike in COVID cases. Health officials say more than 1,000 people tested positive in the past 2 weeks in Sudan. Sudan has registered 300,000 positive cases since the outbreak of the pandemic. The country's task force on COVID-19 has suspended all social gatherings, including prayers, to prevent further infections. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
The chairman of Sudan's high-level task force for COVID-19, Professor Sadiq Taur, issued a statement shortly after the task force meeting in Khartoum last night, saying all schools, universities, and places of worship must be shut down for a period of 30 days, effective today. Health authorities in Khartoum and other areas across the country continue to record new infections of COVID-19, despite directives to wear face masks in public and to continue social distancing, said the statement. The task force says cumulative epidemiological statistics from the Federal Ministry of Health show that out of more than 65,000 samples collected since the beginning of the pandemic, nearly 35,000 people tested positive. The panel's report says 1,116 people have died from COVID-19 within the past 2 weeks, most of whom were 60 or older. All social events and public gatherings in halls and clubs are banned for 1 month, said the statement. Prayer services in mosques and churches are also suspended. The committee also advised all public and private essential institutions to reduce their workforce to 50% to prevent the spread of the virus. Health authorities say they expect the number of infections to exceed 100,000 in the first and second weeks of June if people continue to ignore health guidelines to wear face masks and social distance. Some parents and students in Khartoum are not happy with the decision. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus, Thomas Batista Balash, a graduate of English and Literature at Comboni College in Khartoum, says he was in the middle of preparing for his graduation ceremony, which had been postponed several times.
I already started inviting friends, inviting family, okay, and relatives as well, and they all prepared themselves. I don't know how to face them now, honestly. I don't know how to call them back, especially my mother in South Sudan, because this is the second time for her to prepare herself for coming, and then she received a call from me, hey, you don't have to come.
Khartoum resident Manal Osman says she's afraid that the decision will affect her primary two daughters' education because she will be wasting time in the house. She says the school fees she paid this year was a waste.
This academic year was only 2 months, and pupils have not learned anything at all. Our children have wasted a lot of time. Secondly, schools are supposed to begin the examinations next week. The decision will negatively affect them.
13-year-old Basant Muhammad Ali, a senior one student at Ustaza Noor Secondary School in Khartoum's Jabra neighborhood, says she worries about her future. Basant says she only studied 3 months out of 9 months regular calendar year.
I am down now because I feel my future is not clear. I am afraid whether I will continue with my studies, sit for a national exams or not. I am afraid that what I have studied will be forgotten.
Sudanese authorities also announced a ban on all passengers arriving or connecting flights from India over the past 14 days. All commuters arriving from border crossing through the neighboring Egypt and Ethiopia will be examined, and all those tested positive will be quarantined. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Moudou. The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Uganda is the largest refugee hosting country in Africa, with nearly 1.5 million refugees, most of whom are asylum seekers from countries affected by conflict, including South Sudan. The country began coronavirus vaccinations this week in the camps and settlements. But as Alima Athumani reports from Yumbe in northern Uganda, vaccine hesitancy among refugees is a challenge.
Ugandan authorities have received 964,000 doses of coronavirus vaccine and inoculated 453,000 people as of May 16. Now, the government is extending COVID-19 vaccinations to refugees, most of whom are from South Sudan. In Bidibidi settlement, the vaccination team is first targeting older people aged 50 or higher. To get them to the clinic, the health team is going door to door. Moses Lomoro, a village health team member, says face-to-face interactions helped raise a lot of fears among the elderly.
After getting back, some people have reactions like someone can have a fever and vomiting. So all these rumors have scared some of the community members. And also, because other people do also have access to those social medias and give false information.
The name of the vaccine is AstraZeneca.
Before the vaccination, health workers carry out a counseling session in which each recipient reads and signs a consent form. The consent form reads in part, "As with any vaccine, there is no certainty that I will become immune or that I will not experience any adverse events from the vaccine. I voluntarily assume full responsibility for any events that may result due to vaccination." 65-year-old Mary Nyoka has concerns over the form. She says, "I have pressure, ulcers, and malaria. We're already old enough. Are they giving us a vaccine to kill us?" She says, "So, I'm scared. They are making us sign a consent form." Dr. Charles Onek, a medical officer with the International Rescue Committee, says the community has had many fears that have affected the vaccination process.
People have been wondering, if I get a severe form of reaction and maybe I succumb to it or I die, will I be compensated? So that answer has never been very clear. People are taking that if you receive a COVID vaccine, especially for men, you become impotent. No, this has been a myth, and we have always been talking about it.
Dear communities, coronavirus still exists.
In the settlements, the different health centers use what they call Boda Boda Talk Talk to pass on messages about coronavirus, which causes the COVID-19 disease. Valizina Emi, a clinical officer at Swinger Health Center 3, says they are making progress through these messages.
It is kind of challenging because it has not been happening with other vaccines. This is somehow special. This is a new thing in the vaccination system. We're trying to talk to them and explain to them the reason as to why they should consent, more so because of these side effects.
Ugandan doctors say they will have to reset their messages to show and convince not just refugees, but even locals that any risks associated with the vaccine are minimal compared to getting COVID-19, which carries the risk of death. Halima Athmani for VA News, Yumbe, Northern Uganda.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Moudou. The World Health Organization and the Africa Centers for Disease Control say there are no drugs approved to fight COVID-19. If you have tested positive, talk to a doctor before taking any medicines. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, what is the impact of COVID-19 on mental health? That story is lined up after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. Question today.
Name a spice you like to put on your food.
I take garlic because of its scent. I think it makes the sauce to like taste more better with the garlic.
Reiko. Yeah, Reiko. Okay, Reiko is an ingredient which you add into your sauce and it makes your sauce delicious and tasty.
Pepe is very interesting. African food is interesting.
I'm not a good fan of spices. I believe in the cultural food than putting spices in food.
Onions, I like them so much because there is a way how they smell well. And when you add them in, when I add them in my food, actually the food smells nice.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The UN Refugee Agency is appealing to Tanzania to grant asylum to refugees fleeing violence from the Mozambique Cabo Delgado region. The agency expresses concern that Tanzania has been forcefully deporting Mozambican asylum seekers. For VOA News, Lisa Shrine reports from Geneva.
Reports say Tanzania has turned back more than 4,000 Mozambican asylum seekers since September. The UN Refugee Agency says this includes more than 1,500 people who have been forcibly returned in the last month. They currently are sheltering in dire conditions in the Negomano border point in Mozambique. The UNHCR participated in an interagency mission to this remote, hard-to-reach area in April. Agency spokesman Boris Cheshikov says the deportees told mission members they had hoped to find refuge in Tanzania after fleeing deadly attacks by armed groups in the town of Palma in March. However, they said they were forcibly returned by authorities after trekking for days in difficult terrain and crossing a river by boat to reach Tanzania. Cheshikov says many women and young children were among them. He adds a number of families became separated while fleeing their villages or upon arrival in Tanzania.
Many reported being detained, transported to a local school, and interrogated by Tanzanian officials. Those unable to provide evidence of Tanzanian nationality were returned to Mozambique through a different border point from the one used to enter the country, including individuals of or families of mixed nationalities.
Cheshikov says the situation is particularly desperate for single mothers living in Negomano without family support. He says people are in dire need of food, water and sanitation and health care, but providing humanitarian aid is hampered by difficulties in accessing this remote area.
We have appealed to the government of Tanzania for cooperation to enable us to have access to the border areas. And we're standing ready to support the government to receive the refugees in line with their international obligations. What we're doing is reiterating our call for all parties to allow free movement of civilians fleeing violence and conflict and searching for safety and assistance.
About 724,000 people have been forcibly displaced since the start of the conflict in northern Mozambique's gas-rich Cabo Delgado province in October 2017. Aid agencies have been providing protection and basic relief to 50,000 people. The UNHCR says plans are underway to assist an additional 250,000 people by the end of the year. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Nigerian officials say the coronavirus pandemic's impact on economy and social distancing have tripled the number of mental health cases. In response, Nigeria has launched the first toll-free 24-hour helpline staffed by trained psychologists and counselors. For VOA News, Timothy Obiazu reports from Abuja.
A crowd cheers as a mental health counselor responds to the first call on the COVID-19 psychosocial hotline during its launch in Abuja. It's Nigeria's first toll-free line focused on mental health issues and part of a joint effort between the government and a group of private counselors to address increasing mental health cases in the country. Nigeria's Minister of Special Duties, George Akume, was at the launch.
The virus has done a lot of damage to societies across the world, economically, socially, politically, and health-wise. And that is why counseling becomes a very, very important instrument to control and to manage the behavior of people who have been affected.
Psychologist Aisha Abdullahi heads the team of counselors working on the helpline. In April 2020, she started free online counseling after seeing a significant jump in the number of mental health cases after Nigeria had recorded rising cases of the coronavirus. She says the uncertainty associated with the pandemic at the time caused an increase in anxiety and panic attacks. As a result, as many as 5,000 people reached out to her and her team. Abdullahi expects even more to seek help through the new helpline.
This is a pilot phase, right? We are anticipating that we're going to get a lot of calls, and we are looking at expanding. So that's why we're calling on partner organizations, collaborations, so that we'll be able to expand and be able to meet up to the needs of the calls that we get.
Experts say that even though the number of people needing mental health services tripled during the pandemic, less than 10% get help because of the stigma attached to it. 19-year-old Palemo Avanyajo says she had suffered from depression for years after a surgical procedure on her legs. As her situation deteriorated, she contemplated suicide. She says she eventually overcame suicidal thoughts after working with counselors who were raising awareness on mental health issues.
I was already in seclusion. I was already isolated because everyone would go out, go to work, go to school, and just leave me alone in the house. So I was always alone. And that gave more room for the negative thoughts to grow and to affect me mentally.
Authorities and the team of counselors are hoping that a toll-free line will help increase awareness and that more people will get the help they need. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
From Abuja, we come back to South Sudan, where the deputy police spokesperson of the South Sudan Police Service says the police has detained 12 members of a gang at the UN Protection of Civilian site following an incident where a minor was stabbed dead on Monday. Colonel Dak Carlo says police are now holding the key suspects and his father to help with investigations. For VOA News, Viola Elias has more from Juba.
Majok Yen, a youth leader at the Juba Protection of Civilians or POC site, says group of unruly boys have been terrorizing residents inside the camp for the past few days. Yen says members of rivals' juvenile gang were fighting each other when one gang member stabbed his 16-year-old friend to death on Monday. Yen says the community at the camp handed over some of the gang members to the police, most of whom were released later.
The police took them a while, but they released them when the situation is calm. The one, the guy who killed that one, he came away, but his father is surrendered to the police. I think when he had his father is arrested, he came also and surrender. Yeah, they surrender to the police.
Colonel Dak Carlo, deputy spokesperson of the South Sudan National Police Service, says police briefly detained 12 juvenile members of the gang at the POC site following the incident and later released all of them except one. He says police are detaining the chief suspect and his father. He says if a suspect is found not guilty of the crime being investigated, they could be released.
Usually when there is a tribal right, we actually apprehend whoever is found in the scene of the offense so that we deduct the evidence or the information as witnesses. But at the end of the day, they will be released and will concentrate on the culprit. So it is a matter of investigation procedure. We want to see whether the father has instigated the case or is part of the joint act. But if the investigation proves that he is innocent, then he automatically will be released.
Section 206 of the South Sudan Penal Code states that whoever causes the death of another person with the intention of causing death or knowing the death would be the probable consequences of the act or of any bodily injury which the act was intended to cause commits the offense of murder and upon conviction be sentenced to death or imprisonment for life and may also be liable to a fine. CAM community leader Majokien says the situation inside the CAM is calm after the police apprehend the suspect and his father. Carlo says the police have noticed an increase in criminal activity inside the Juba POC site. Yen says communities living within the CAM have held meetings to address the issue of violence among youth in hopes of resolving tensions between rival gangs. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
That's our show for this Wednesday. Let's know what you think about this show. Our WhatsApp number is +12026308011. We will air your comments every Friday. We now leave you with the song Itumia Junubin by Emmanuel Lasso. We've been listening to Emmanuel Lasso with the song Intumia Junubin. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.